Hi, it's Terry from No Crumbs Left, and I'm glad to be back here. I've had a few weeks off, and I'm so excited because I'm sitting across the table from my friend Lori J. Welcome, Lori.
Hi, Terry. It's nice to see you again.
It's so great, and I haven't seen you since we wrapped the book.
Yes, it's been a few months.
And Lori was the prop stylist on the book. And what I love is, before you do a book, you don't even know that a person needs a prop stylist,
Right.
you know? And as a matter of fact, we started without you. And when we sent our first test pictures into the publisher, he was like, "Are you working with a prop stylist? You know that you really should be." So we scrambled to like find and who and what and all of that. But it was so fortunate that we found you, and didn't we have a great time?
We did. I loved meeting you and looking at your props the first day that we met, and I knew that we were going to be a good match for each other.
I love that. Well, what a great thing to do for a living. And one of the things I think that happens is it's sort of like when people work on a show, when you work on with a group on a project like we did the cookbook. I mean, people become a family of sorts.
Absolutely.
You know, and you really spend long days together and you see the good, bad, and the ugly. And
Yes.
I know that for me, the cookbook was such a special and wonderful experience.
Oh, I felt like part of your family. So it was really nice to be a part of that and to work with Tim Turner. And it was just a fabulous experience.
Well, people ask often, the photographer on the cookbook, we have the same last name, and people have said, "Well, is that like your husband or your brother?" And he is my brother of sorts. We were parents together at our kids' school, so we went through 14 years together, and he was always this amazing photographer and a foodie friend. And so we would see each other at the farmers market and do all of that. And that at some point, I'm going to have him on the podcast. But he has been a champion, of the brand, and I was so delighted to be able to hire him to do the photography on the book, and he's amazing. And
He is amazing.
that was a lot of fun. So how, tell us it, like, so you're a prop stylist. Are you also a food stylist? I mean, tell us about, because people have this idea, we all have these things we can do for a living, and I like to expand it and go, the world is limitless. You can make up what you do for a living. But tell us what you do and how did you fall into that?
Well, I would classify myself as a prop stylist foremost. I do some food styling, but it's very minimal. Like, I would never take on like Butterball as a client because there's no way I'm going to make a turkey. So I classify myself as a prop stylist and have kind of situated myself collecting and obtaining props and surfaces to do print ads and also TV commercials. And that's pretty much what I've done my entire career. I got super lucky and I had a friend who was a prop stylist, and we had been friends for a while, and I never really understood exactly what she did. I had even gone to the studio that she worked at, saw, I think she was working on, maybe it was like Raisin Bran at the time, and I saw all these raisin models and real raisins and then dates that were oversized and models of like beautiful flakes. And I never really understood it. And then, as it turned out, she got pregnant after years of trying, and she couldn't do the long hours. And so her and I had a lunch together, and she said, "Would you want a job share?" She'd work mornings, I'd work afternoons. And I had worked at a family business, so I had a little bit of flexibility. And I sat down and I thought, somebody is going to pay me to shop and just make things look pretty. And she said, "Yeah, that's exactly pretty much what the job is." And I think she stayed on for about 6 months. And when she left and decided she wanted to be a full-time mom, I basically took over her position and have worked as a prop stylist since then.
So how long has that been?
Oh, God. About 18 years, I think.
And I remember one story you told me. There was something where somebody asked you to set up and somebody else set up.
Yes,
Now
that was
tell us that
her.
story. Okay, I like that story.
It was my very first job. We went to the studio, we got the information that we needed for our shoot, and it was going to be an Italian feast. And Tuscany was our inspiration. So we both went out separately. shopped for the job, and then we came back and we both set up tables. And she said, okay, you know, the director's going to come through. He wants to look at the props, but we're going to set it up just visually for him. So I said, okay. So I did my table. She did her table. And after she said, oh my God, you're really good. And I was like, oh, good. I felt validated at that point because she had been a prop stylist for years. And she said, you know what? I think you're actually better than me. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's fantastic. I think that I've always had an innate sense of scale and proportion. And I think that really helps with design. So some things just come very natural for me.
Well, I mean, I like that because, of course, for most of us, if we're good at something, it's passion and sort of love of something that leads
yes.
us there.
Definitely.
And there are ways that you can go to school and be educated for it, you know.
Yes.
But also, some of it comes innately, and
yes.
by sort of trusting our wisdom and, you know, going for it.
Yes.
It leads us there. I always feel like the universe provides a way. If we know and we put it out there and we go, this is what I want to do, the universe will meet you, and there'll be all kinds of magical things that will come along every step of the way to take you to the next place. But part of it is really believing in that sort of wisdom of the universe.
Yes.
You know, and I know that sounds a little bit whatever, but I believe it and I live it.
I believe the same thing. I think that if you throw things out into the universe and you project a certain image, or you're trying to attract a certain way of life or something for yourself, I think that the universe does have a way of providing for you.
And part of it is, too, I think, it's that sort of when we do have a lot of negative self-talk. Mm-hmm. Anytime it's a negative self-talk, I really try to put it in the positive, you know, sort of see all of the hurdles as taking me to the next place. Tell us, what does it mean on a daily basis? Okay, you're a prop stylist. I mean, how many days a week do you normally work? You know, how do you get your jobs and what do you do?
Well, it can vary. I'm freelance, so I usually work with certain photographers, and everybody has relationships. To get started in the business, it does take a little doing because you have to
pay your dues.
Trust. Yeah, and you have to pay dues. So that really typically means that you have to work for free a couple of times, just so that photographer, director kind of has an idea of your style, and you have to see if your relationship is going to work together. Because there is a trust issue. You have to know that this person's going to be able to do the job that's set in front of them. A lot of times I say I'm a glorified mover because I haul things all the time. I specifically have a pickup truck for that reason. I get a job. Usually it is food related, and that's probably how we ended up meeting ourselves. So I get surfaces and everything that I need for the shoot. Like I go through, I look at the recipes, I look to see if there's anything that would go with that recipe, or find out whether or not they want to view the photograph as a completed dish, or if they wanted something that's kind of like set up in process. So I'd have to have props that would either go either way. So whether that's napkins, plates, silverware, glassware, or if it's more in a process setting, then I have to have cutting boards, knives, and ramekins, bowls, anything for that kind of a look. And typically, you end up having relationships with somebody, and then they're kind of, you're their go-to person.
Mm-hmm. So that might be an agency, or it might be like, how does that all filter? Is some of it agency, some of it's client directly, and sometimes it's photographer? Do you have lots of legs?
If you have a rep, then that would be more agency driven.
Okay.
I don't have a rep per se. I've been in it so long that I kind of can get around not having one. So I have relationships with photographers, with directors, and also clients. And some clients specifically request me for jobs. So it's a nice kind of payback, I guess.
And I always thought this was interesting. So how does it work? A client can put you on hold for a job that's in 2 weeks, right?
Yes.
And then take us through what they when they have to make a commitment or how that works. I just thought this was so interesting.
Oh, so what typically happens if somebody thinks there's a job coming up for a particular client, they put you on hold. And if you're available, you give them a first hold. Now, other photographers throughout the time period before the job, they can also be requesting you for that same dates. So then you have to give them a second hold. If your second hold is ready to book you for a job, you have to go to your first hold and either get a book or release from them. And most of the times, if they take a risk, knowing that they're 99% sure that they're going to get the job, then they'll just go ahead and book you. If not, then they have to release you so that you can take work with your second hold.
Okay, so interesting. How many days a month, let's say, do you think you work?
These days, I would say the past couple of years have been particularly busy. But our job is very feast or famine.
Right.
So sometimes we can work, you know, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, and sometimes we can go into overtime during those hours. But then sometimes we can have a month off. You know, January is typically a slow month for us, as is June. And December typically is very busy. And it's people trying to use up their advertising budget before
right.
the end of the year.
End of the year. Right.
Yeah.
So tell me about collecting. I have seen some of the beautiful things you have. And I was doing my Whole30 Recipes takeover, and we are starting to put out some of the pictures of the book, but we're, you know, keeping some of them secret. And so a lot of people were asking about that beautiful dish that you had for my grapefruit chicken, which, by the way, is on the blog, and it is an incredible recipe, which my kids loved. Tell me about collecting. Like, where do you find all your wonderful things?
I have some sort of sense that my boyfriend is like, I have no idea how you managed to figure out that there is a antique store around the corner and down the block. Somehow, I have a sense of finding them. I go to thrift stores. I go to antiques stores, flea markets, and, you know, the everyday run-of-the-mill store that, you know, everybody shops at, like the big stores.
Mm-hmm. And where do you, I mean, how much do you have and where do you keep it all? I know, I have an idea.
I have a lot. I am fortunate that I have a basement. I keep a lot of my props there. And I also have a 10 by 30 storage unit full of stuff. Yeah.
How do you keep all that organized?
It's hard.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It takes a lot of time after a job. I always have to account at least a half a day to a full day in order to get everything back in its place and where it needs to be. So the next job, I know where it is and I can kind of get it quickly.
One of the things that worked well was when we were doing the book, we just sort of gave up, you know, my house, which used to be like a lovely house. And now it's just like, you
it
know,
still is a lovely house.
It's a lovely house operating as a business. So it's like in the front room, we have marinated onion bowls that didn't make it to the finish line. And, you know, in this room, we have this and that, which was because it was a slower time and it was June. We had you leave a lot of your things there.
Yes.
And then, you know, part of how it works is, when you're working on the cookbook, this is how we did it. We would work like 3 days a week on the cookbook.
Yes.
Because there's not just shooting. There is like prep and the lists and grocery shopping and doing what we could in advance. And, you know, we weren't used to, I mean, we are such hard workers, but doing a cookbook is, without a doubt, it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. The work, the days, the pace, I mean, physically. Because if we photographed six dishes, what that means is that we made 12 dishes. Because
yes.
we didn't have one roast chicken, we did two. We didn't have one roast pork, we did two. So we
yes.
were doing 12 dishes. It was operating on such a clip, and it was crazy. One of the things that I loved was that not only did you, you know, bring wonderful props, but you understood at a certain point that for me, those things are great, but my family props, that I wanted
yes.
this cookbook to be more. So speak a little bit about that.
Well, I knew that your mom is associated with the rooster.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was just so special that you had something that kind of signified her. And I liked that you wanted to include little things that showed that you still think about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to hand you this right now.
I love that. It's so perfect.
And I thought just a few seconds ago, I'm like, oh, interestingly enough, it's white, blue, and black. that's just something that's a little kitschy, but I kind of thought of you when I saw it at an antique store.
Okay, I'm going to open this up.
I just gave Terry a little gift bag.
Oh, I love it. So it's a rooster. I'm going to show it on the stories with measuring spoons in the tail. So great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
She finds special antiques, beautiful vintage things.
That's the first time I've ever seen anything like that. Since it was a rooster, I'm like, oh, I have to get this for Terry. So.
It's the best.
And I was going to send it to you probably about a month ago, and I just got busy, and so I kind of forgot. But I really loved incorporating like your family silverware in the stories, and I loved that all of your photographs kind of told a story about who you were and your family and your background. I loved that.
Well, you know, when you go to make a book, first of all, there's like all of the recipes, and then you say, well, if I'm going to do a book, and let's say this is the only book I do, what more do I want to say? What's important to me? Because it becomes so much more than just the recipes. So
yes. For
me, my parents gone, but my family is paramount, you know, the kids that I have and the family that I come from. So I wanted to incorporate, you know, my grandma posts things, and I wanted to see my dad. And for me, my dad's sort of, you know, a fish in many ways. So it's like
yes. Have
my dad's fish glasses and have my grandmother's, you know, beautiful crystal with the gold around it, and the silver that I share with my sister and my mother, and the crystal glasses that I share. So for me, I was like, I know you have all this great stuff, but I want you to know what's also really important to me.
Yes.
Is these things and my Astier, which I collect. Yeah.
I envy your collection. I was blown away with your pieces that you have. They're gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
You know, collecting them over 20 years, getting one piece at a time. But what was great for me was that you weren't locked into, you know, of course, someone comes, they want to prove themselves and they have everything that's fabulous. And that's great. But at a certain point, you really got, oh, this is actually really important. And this is part of the story of the book. And you were so good at just writing with that. And then going, let's really make the magic of that pop, which was so it was an amazing experience for me.
Well, the props aren't, it shouldn't have been a reflection of me. It should have been a reflection of you, because this is your book and I wanted it to really be for you and about you. So my job was just to elevate that, you know, to kind of, you know, maybe push you a little bit in some respects, because I know I brought some chippy paint surfaces that you were like, absolutely not. But, you know, I think we got that in. I'm
absolutely
one of the homie, the casserole that was your family recipe.
Right. That was a good one. So I think that was the thing, was finding that blend between, I wasn't really able to do completely stripped paint kind of moment, but it's like, I really want something that also feels weathered.
Yes.
And part of your superpower, and as bloggers, we look for surfaces, because every surface that people see with a blogger is not an actual table. Sometimes it is my table.
Yes.
Right? But it's a surface for something. And you would find surfaces that are just like, where does one find that? How do I do that?
It is looking everywhere, like flea markets and antique stores. And sometimes you have to look at things in a different way. So sometimes it might be a box. It could be a crate. It could be a suitcase. You just have to look at things in a different way and kind of know how that would photograph. And that's just a little bit of experience, you know, knowing what will look good and what won't, you know. And I always think that texture and patina are huge, just as much as color is in a story, but texture and having just a little bit of a worn patina is always just beautiful and photographs really well.
So are you handy? Like, can you take a suitcase and you cut it down, or how do you get there?
Yes, I've been known to paint and wax, and you know, sometimes I just find like a beautiful board and I think, okay, well, you know, maybe I can transform it a little bit more to bring out some character that I think would be important and would photograph really well. I also have a very handy boyfriend, and so sometimes I might find, you know, I found metal pieces and I asked him if he could fabricate them together, and he would put nails or rivets in them and create a surface that way, or even aging metals. Just kind of, you know, being handy and being able to take it to the next level. Because it might be brand new and shiny, but brand new and shiny is good in some instances, but sometimes that little worn patina is just a little bit better, where it has more depth and more character.
Yeah, some of your backgrounds, like you have that, there was a kind of a large one that's that we kept for, I don't know, a couple of weeks after the book. That you let
the
us...
The table?
Yeah, just
yeah.
Love that. I mean, you just have so many magical...
That I found
things.
At a flea market, and that had little insets of metal that were kind of like hammered in. Just, you know, anything that kind of elevates a plain surface really brings out more character in a photograph.
And when you say tell a story, like, what does that mean? In everything that you're prop styling, are you always like, what is our story? Do you say that to yourself?
A little bit. You always have to think of, do you want to inspire a certain mood? Do you want to create like more appetite appeal? There's certain colors that are associated with emotions. And, you know, if you have something that's white and bright, that's usually very fresh. And if you have something yellow, that means, you know, like it evokes like a happy kind of emotion. Red, always passion, always desire. And if you kind of think about it, a lot of fast food places have red as part of their color story and their logos, because they kind of want to excite that taste appeal and desire for it. And people don't usually associate colors with emotions, but it's always there.
And what about texture? How does texture play into that?
Well, texture, I guess the easiest way for me to describe this would be if you see a pergo floor. Pergo floor, while it has its applications, it is basically a photograph of a real piece of wood. But it doesn't have texture and dimension. So it's very flat. And if you have a hand-scraped wood, it has all of that character built into it. It has a lot of texture. So when light is shine on it, usually there's a directional source of light in photographs, it creates shadows. And all of that shadows just bring out more depth in the surface.
So what are all... For food bloggers, then what are the components we should be thinking of?
Well, you should be thinking of finding things that are unique to you. That's part of the reason why I collect so much, is because I like having things that are only mine and that I can bring to the table to a job that other stylists can't. So I always say to people that you should collect things that you love. And if you went shopping, and even without even like thinking about it, if you just buy things that you like, somehow magically they kind of all go together. And you could start a wonderful collection just based off of that.
And just in terms of us, let's say, photographing food, mm-hmm. because I hear you talk about texture and color. And when we're looking at a story, are there some questions we should be asking ourselves?
Well,
or some tips that you might, you know, give us?
I would say proportion and scale are huge. Just as, you know, if you had a large platter that you were going to put on your buffet, you wouldn't put a small spoon on it to serve from. You would put something that, you know, would... take a big serving. And if you think of it that way, everything has a certain proportion and scale. And I would try and keep that in the foremost front of your thoughts.
Can I just break in here?
Who are you, by the way?
Who am I? I don't even know. Boy, she sounds familiar. I'm Lucy. I'm your kid.
Okay, Lucy's in town. And so she's sitting here quietly, but in true Turner fashion.
Well,
she's
yeah.
broken on in. Okay,
it's
what do you...
hard for me to just sit here while something so interesting is happening.
We're not that good at sitting. Okay.
And I was here for some of the book being made, so it was
yes.
so fun
right.
to... Lori taught me how to frost a cake.
Oh
yes!
Yeah. One of the better days of my life, even though I don't eat cake anymore, which is really sad. But... I'm just wondering, because I saw the volume of things that you had at our house, the dishes, and you're saying that you have so many more dishes. Is it ever sort of like the Oscars, where like you feel like you could never wear that dress again? Like, you know, you could never, you use this dish for a big project and you feel like, now I can't really use that again? Or do you find that you have dishes that you continue to use again and again for different projects? I know the backgrounds probably you use a lot, but just with special things that you find that you love, how often can you use a certain thing?
That's a great question. It really depends. I will say, yes, there some things can kind of overstay their welcome. And I know Terry feels the same way about this particular dish that I'm going to bring up. Remember the, it's kind of a knockoff of the Ostier, which was sold by a store. Starts with A, ends with apology.
right.
It is a gorgeous, it was a gorgeous dish, and they had a whole line and beautiful platters, but it became overused. Every stylist had it in their collection, and they used it for so many shoots that it kind of gets to the point where you're like, okay, well, I've seen that, you know, and you don't want to have that happen. You want to have something unique. And that's why I like shopping at flea markets, because I know I can get a one-of-a-kind thing or a handmade plate that is just mine, you know. And there might be a few of them out there in the world, but for the most part, I have it, you know.
And you have so many different things that you rotate.
I definitely rotate all the time. And, you know, some people, they have a certain look that they like. And some people, it's clean and new, modern. Others want that aged look. Some people want handmade. It really depends on the client. And usually on a job, we do get mood boards. And that is sort of our inspiration, our jumping off point.
And who gives that to you? The director or the...
It's usually the agency.
Okay.
So there is usually some art direction on the agency side, and they kind of give us a jumping off point. Now, for us as a stylist, we do have to follow that. But we can kind of push our boundaries a little bit. And, you know, maybe we think that something else, you know, really would be better suited. We kind of go in that direction. And then, you know, hopefully the clients like that, and hopefully we get our way.
I think it's important. I think one of the things with my clients that I do is I'm good at what I do. And a lot of times a client might come to someone and say, I want you to do this. And I've noticed, like, blogger friends where I'll say, well, but why did you do that? If, like, we're good friends. Well, that's what the client wanted. And I'm like, but here's the thing. We're experts on our brand. And if you know the client's making a mistake, then it is much better to push back with that client and say, you're making a mistake.
Yes.
You know, let me try it this way. And if we don't succeed, we'll do it another way. And I think that's what makes you and I different sometimes, is that you're willing to, I'm usually a little more forceful, you're quieter. we're willing to get in there and, you know, really take it to the mat and say, let's try this. And I think you wouldn't let me go the wrong way because you just want to please me.
Correct.
And I wouldn't let my client go in the wrong way. And there are people who really will, because in a way they don't sort of have that confidence.
Yes.
That just, I think, for both of us kind of, you know, comes naturally to us.
Yes. Well, a lot of times they'll come to me and they'll say, you know, well, we want fries on a cutting board with a burger. You're putting brown food on something else brown. And for me, I usually either try and get them to either take the tone of the wood in a different direction than what they wanted originally, or push it in a totally different direction and bring in like a stone, like a big chunky stone or piece of slate or something like that. And that just comes with confidence and mm-hmm. and doing something over that you kind of know, like, well, you know, this color would be better suited on this. You want that contrast. You want things to pop, and you want colors to kind of explode and be exciting and not have everything be blah.
And we want, you know, one of the things we talk about in the kitchen or when we're photographing is that we want real food moments. We want organic moments. So if we have a finished product and then we have the wrapper to the client's product in there, it's an odd moment. You wouldn't yes. be having this with this finished salad and then having their packaging in the background. That's not an organic moment. So what we might do is a pre-post,
yes.
which allows them. And then it, actually, we're giving them even more, but we want to do something that's organic and makes sense. So
yes.
we put the packaging in a pre-post because that is a story that makes sense. And when I first got started, that was Tim, who works with us and is so amazing, will always be like, but is that a real food moment? And it's really got me thinking about that.
Yes.
What is a real food moment
mm-hmm.
and how do we incorporate and make that happen? But I think it definitely takes being a risk taker and just be willing to put, you know, your balls on the line a little bit.
Absolutely.
So, okay, let's just get to that cake decorating. I don't know if it's the kind of thing you can do. Just as a food, as a person who, you are a natural food stylist.
Yes,
know, having been on the job with you, there were some times where it's like you know, cut and made the wonderful hors d'oeuvre that I have with the tuna, where you cut it and it was like so perfect, so much more perfect than I would have. You know, as the job went on and you know, helped us like really art direct those pieces where it was like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. You decorated the cake. What are some, do you just have some good food tips that you could share with us in any way?
Oh gosh. I think all of my techniques that I have learned throughout the years has become from working closely with food stylists.
Yes.
Usually the prop stylist is sitting next to the set and we're there to kind of clean off plates or arrange things. And so I have the privilege of working with some amazing food stylists and kind of stole some of their tips.
Yeah, well, nothing is original.
No. Yeah, so I don't know. I think just have fun with your food. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. Perfect is not what anyone should strive for. You know, those kind of things don't make you want to eat it. You know, if it's that perfect thing, you know, you don't want to mess it up. But if it's kind of perfectly imperfect, it has way more appetite appeal.
Well, you heard it here first.
And well, I have to say that marinated onions are on my table all the time.
I love it.
Yes.
So do you have the white bowl or the black bowl?
I have both.
Oh, well, you are
and I have
stylist.
Multiples of both.
And do you have the salt and pepper cellars?
Absolutely.
And then today I gave you a sneak peek at some of the things that we've got going on. What did you think of what we've got?
I am so excited. I cannot wait to get my hands on every piece that you've shown me.
We have a lot of things back from the potter. And so, you know, it's like we're introducing over time and we've got some platters happening. And then with the book launch happening, we're packaging with the book some of the products and, you know, different levels of things you can get. So we had a meeting with a potter last week and there are so many great things. And I brought him to show Lori because I think of you as someone like with the best taste, mm-hmm. you know, in the
thank
world.
Thank you.
So, well, thank you so much for coming today. This was so much fun.
Oh, thank you for having me. I never got a chance to, like, ask you any questions about recipe development, which is something I've always been fascinated about. I have no idea where you even begin with that.
Well, that'll be a whole other podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
Now, tell me, if people want to find you, where do they come find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Lori J Stylist, and I do spell my name a little weird. It is LORRIEJ Stylist. And my website is also under the same name, Lori J Stylist.
And we will link her up here to the podcast. And if you have a question, you can come over and find me and I can show you where she lives. Anyways, Lori, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Lucy Hartman, thanks for joining in. I did say to Lucy, you're going to have to just sit here and be quiet. And you know, we aren't really real followers. So, everybody have a great day.
Bye.